on radio and waking up in America. We actually started out on KFOX down in Redondo Beach, California, and I caught the bug, actually, when I was a kid, and I used to lean my head up against the radio, one of those big old wooden radios, and listen to Sky King and The Shadow and different things like that, and I really appreciated the creativity of radio and the wonderful way that I could add my own fantasy and my own imagination and my own concepts to the words that I was hearing on the radio. So I've always appreciated radio, though we've been on television as well. So you're actually listening to Waking Up in America, Vital Issues, and we love to create dialogues on what I determine and I hear from others are important today, and we have a very special guest. It's Dr. William Glasser, and he's specifically going to be talking about 8 Lessons for a Happier Marriage, and you're going to love this guy. He's all about choice, and he's been all about choice for a very long time, and we'll find out more about that. We've had champions from all kinds of fields, and that's what we do. We go to different fields, and we get the champions, whether it be in biology or health or relationships or sometimes even military, depending on it, sometimes even sports. We've had a lot of Olympic champions on Waking Up in America. What I like to do is I like to find out how great minds think and what great minds have to share, and then we get to interact with that. So if you're a listener and you actually want to ask Dr. Glasser or myself a question, all you do is you simply email me at Val, V-A-L, at WakingUpInAmerica.com. Once again, that's V-A-L at WakingUpInAmerica.com. Now, what you notice when you talk to all these people is that they have accomplishment and they have excellence in what they do. They're willing to take things to the best, okay? And you'll notice that great people come from all different kinds of backgrounds, all the way from people who lived on the streets and had to fend for themselves to what you find amongst a lot of the Olympic champions is they were all very strongly supported by their families. So you've got people coming to their greatness through a great variety of different topics, and that's a really exciting thing for us. Now, we're all capable of reaching some kind of excellence, and that would be your excellence could be as a baker or a homemaker or as a great statesperson. There's all kinds of ways that excellence shows itself, and it doesn't have to be that you're rich and famous. It has to be that you're doing what your heart calls forth for you. So we invite you to visit our website at WakingUpInAmerica.com. We'd like to thank our new webmaster, Nancy, and her daughter, Amy, because they're just really helping us get everything perked up and put in order for our 21st year here. And the fabulous part about this, I love it, listeners are sending me videos, and some of these videos are just brilliant, just incredibly lovely things. There's one on there about an elephant, and the elephant, I think it'll be on by tomorrow, the elephant is actually painting a self-portrait of itself. I mean, and not only that, it puts a flower in its trunk. It's amazing stuff that's going up there. There's Michael J. Fox talking about what it's like to have his particular affliction. There's a man up there knowing that he's going to die talking about that. There's children talking about the thing. They're about the future of the world and will the parents and grown-ups please grow up and take care of things for them. If you go to the site, you're going to find a lot of stuff that you don't see in the ordinary media, and it's very, very special stuff. So once again, our website is Val. My email is Val at WakingUpInAmerica.com. Our website is WakingUpInAmerica.com. And my little conversation for today, I love to read the BBC. That's one of the things that you'll find out about me. And what I want to let you know is that according to the BBC, U.S. welcomes just a little more love in the world. It turns out that a BBC world poll shows that we have a slightly more positive view around the world. It's only an improvement of 4 percentage points, with 35% of the people saying that the U.S. is a positive influence rather than the 31. But it's been welcomed by American officials and people alike. And you better believe I'm grateful for those 3 points. And what I'm hoping here is, well, actually I know here is that Dr. Glasser is going to bring a few points to your relationship. And one of the things that I thought about Dr. Glasser before I got into this was I started thinking about, well, you talk about marriage in your book, and I think most people think of that as a male-female marriage. And I started thinking about, well, and then I went to, well, there's gay couples, so we'll need to include that. And then I thought, well, you know, I bet you this is a really good book. I like it. And I thought, well, it'll probably even affect relationships or friendships. And then I thought, gosh, if you followed the rules in Dr. Glasser's book and you took it to work with you, you could probably affect your job. And then, well, gosh, if you could do all of this, then probably Dr. Glasser's book would help you really affect society. Have you considered all of that? Certainly.
I wrote the book to be read by a lot of people because marriage is the least successful of all human relationships. And that's explained pretty well in the book, and I can explain it. Many marriages fail for a variety of reasons, and some people grit their teeth and stay in an unhappy marriage for many, many years. But when I talk about marriage, I talk about all kinds of marriages, but I'm really concerned with successful marriages because I say in the beginning of the book, everyone gets married.
Right, right.
But everyone doesn't get married successfully, but they get married, and some people get married several times, and some people in some societies marry more than one mate, but regardless, it's still marriage.
Well, I know you were born in 1925 in Cleveland, Ohio.
Right. Everybody got married in Cleveland, Ohio.
I'm going to ask you later, but what kind of kid were you?
Well, I was just an ordinary kid and went to Cleveland Heights schools and went to college in Cleveland. The main change in my life came when I was accepted into medical school because I was a clinical psychologist at that time. I started out as a chemical engineer. That wasn't very successful, but clinical psychology was very limited in those days. You really couldn't even talk to people. You could only test them. So what I did is I was told by one of my teachers, don't be a clinical psychologist. Go to medical school and become a psychiatrist. And I said, well, I never ever had very good grades in school. Well, I mean, reasonable grades. But anyway, the point is that happened. I got accepted into Western Reserve Medical School, and since that time, my life has dramatically changed because I feel with that degree, MD, after my name, and with the fact that I'm certified as a psychiatrist, I'm a board-certified psychiatrist, even though I don't really practice psychiatry the way most people do.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. I know I didn't get started that way, William. Mm-hmm. I actually, when I was like 8 or 9 years old, I wondered what the difference was, why some families were happy and some marriages were happy and others weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that my particular family was, which I had an English background, heavy English background, was very proper. But I noticed a lot of other families that seemed to be having more fun. And I realized that even at that early age, that it was simply what they were thinking. I realized it wasn't like necessarily a right person or a wrong person, what the people were thinking. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed reading your book so much, because I saw that in your 8 lessons for a happier marriage, that it included things like speaking and listening. And I'm not sure that was present a lot. I mean, in my world, it was children are to be seen and not heard.
Well, I wasn't raised that way. I mean, I was the youngest of 3 children, and I didn't get along very well with my brothers, and my brother and sister were older, but I got along very well with my father and reasonably well with my mother. And since I was the youngest child and they traveled a lot, they took me with them a lot of times. And my mother was a great teacher. She taught me whenever we went someplace, she would teach me. And one of the places I visited was the Chicago Stockyards. We were in Chicago, and my mother would teach me things, and she would say, in the stockyard, she'd say, now, because she learned this, because you see it on a wall, and she said, they have 2 lines to visit the stockyard. They were killing pigs that day. You can see the pigs killed, or you could not see the pigs killed. And my mother said, I want to teach you something, Billy, she called me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in this line of 30 people will stop to see the pigs killed. Not one of them will skip that event, and I saw them killed too. So
What do you think that? Why do you think that's true?
It's true because people really like violence, and people like to see things happen like that, and it's just that's how people are. It's what people really. They don't. I noticed even then. I noticed on my streets growing up, and my families that I knew and knew everyone on the street. A lot of the families didn't get along with each other, especially the husbands and wives. It was in the Depression at that time, and families were really very, very hard pressed to even live, much less get along with each other. So, generally, and that's something I remembered. And then she took me another place, a big Catholic cathedral in Montreal. We traveled once to Montreal. My mother said, I'll show you something here that they don't usually show you when they visit the Catholic cathedral. And she went in the back and found a big room. And the room was filled with earphones and crutches and everything like that. And my mother said, you see, this is where people come to the cathedral and they think they're getting kind of divine help, and they throw these things away, and then when they go home, they got to buy them again. So these are things I learned growing up, and I.
So with that, we're actually going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Waking Up in America. You're on the air with Dr. Val Kirkhard and Dr. William Glasser. Oh my gosh, I love it. Do you want to ask us a question? Pop it over to Val at WakingUpInAmerica.com. Want to make a comment? You know, you can actually call us at toll-free 866-RADIO-99. Once again, that's toll-free 866-RADIO-99. You want to do something that will make a difference in the world and cost you nothing? Go to WakingUpInAmerica.com. Click on our link, Race to the Rainforest. And once you get inside there, you'll see you have a choice of rainforest, American prairie, or marine wetlands. That won't send you through. You actually have to go up to the right-hand corner of the page and sign up for Nature Conservancy's race and get your own link. Once you do that, you can start saving 7 square feet of whatever it is every day, and a sponsor will match you. I've been doing this for years, and I think I must have a pretty good-sized lot down there now in the rainforest. So that's something that it's kind of like giving blood. This week I went and I gave blood again at the American Red Cross, and almost every one of us can do that. There are a few exceptions, but that's something that, you know, really makes the difference, and especially whether you like the war or don't like the war, blood is needed, and it's needed over there, wherever over there is, and it's also needed in your community and in your locality because things happen, and blood is something that's very important. So I suggest you check with your local American Red Cross and go over there, and if you want peanut butter cookies and juice, you've got all that you want. And come away feeling really good, and you know you've made a difference. Depending upon how you give, you can give up to 4 pints a year, or there's, I don't want to get into the details, but you can ask for the Alex machine, which is very powerful too. So let's say while you've been sitting here and you've been listening to Waking Up in America, or when you were at work, or when you got up this morning, you noticed that you had a tight neck or sinus problems, or you noticed that you got the clicker turned up pretty high on your TV set, or you go, eh, when you're talking with people, go to coningcompany.com. That's coningcompany.com. This 5,000-year-old process is affordable and effective. For more information, call 310-459-4824. That's 310-459-4824. Coning is just an absolutely remarkable experience. It's been going on for 5,000 years, and the Coning Company makes beeswax rose cones, and they're the best in the world. A lot of people will say that. So, as I was saying, we're on the air with Dr. William Glasser. He's discussing his book, 8 Lessons for a Happier Marriage, and we're discussing the conversation of marriage. And what we're going to be talking about next, in the next quarter hour, we're actually going to be talking about the transformation of how marriages were in the past to what they are today. And after that, we're going to be talking about actual techniques, about what you can use in your world. I love your quality world, by the way, William. And we've got other conversations saved up for you later. So what kind of change have you seen in marriage? How long have you been married, Dr. Glasser?
I was married for my first marriage 46 years, and then my wife passed away And after several years, I met my present wife, and we've been married about 14, 15 years.
But you spent the bulk of your life married.
What?
You spent the bulk of your life married.
Yeah, I got married when I was 21.
Yeah, I got married when I was 24. I'm a different kind of marriage. I got married when I was 24, and for irreconcilable difference at the time, that's what they called it, I left after 9 years of marriage, but the attorney that was actually going to put through our divorce, he died. And we took that as a sign to stay married longer. So we actually, we didn't live together. We stayed married for 22 years. And Lon Kirkgaard is one of the most precious human beings in my life to this day, because we do take care of each other for better or worse. But Kura Kirkgaard is a wonderful woman that he has lived with, and actually they celebrated their 24th wedding anniversary. So marriages don't have to just look a particular way. Lonnie and I really stand and support each other, and Kura is just as good as it gets. So you don't have to kill off an ex-spouse, because in our hearts, Dr. Glasser, we said to each other that we would keep a little bit of each other in our hearts all the time, that we would keep a piece of each other, and that we would always love and support each other until death did us part. So we stayed that way.
And you seem to be doing that, right?
Very, 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 very well. We got married in 1962, so what is that, 40? We've been related and loving for 44 years now, 46 years.
But you don't live with each other.
No. I always tell everybody that I'm his first wife. He's the second wife, and we always agree that it takes two wives sometimes to bring up a husband.
Well, when my first wife was real sick and going to pass away from cancer, which she did, at the end she said, "I've got some advice for you." And I said, "I don't want to talk about that." No, she said, "We've got to talk about it because you know I'm going to die, and I have some advice for you." And so I didn't say anything. She said, "My advice for you is get another wife because I don't believe you're capable of taking care of it." And what I did is I got another wife, and she takes extremely good care of me. And it's wonderful, and my first marriage was pretty good, but this marriage is better.
Isn't that something? So was it things you learned, or just your maturity as a man?
Well, I learned a lot of things, but I come from a family where people don't get divorced, and I never had any indication to get divorced, but we had some things that I didn't like about her, and I'm sure there were some things she didn't like about me, and we probably never really confronted those things. So at the end, then she passed away. And this time, when I got married to Carlene, my second wife.
Now, she actually wrote this book with you, right? She
wrote the book with me, and we decided to talk about it. And I practice something called choice theory. I teach it all over the world. It's kind of a way to... Choice theory is the way to relate to each other happily. And that's one of the things that the marriage doesn't do. It gets you married, and sometimes you even get sexually involved. Most people do, and from that comes children, and lots of things happen. But they never learn how to get along well with each other. So I teach choice theory all over the world. I teach teachers how to get along with their students. I'm going to make an important videotape for New York State, how in school, if you do two things, most students will get along with their teachers. And Alfie Cohn, he's another one like me that works around, talks around. And I'm going to talk about never give low grades. Either get a good grade or no grade. And Alfie's going to talk about never give homework. Students hate homework, and most homework kind of destroys the relationship between the teacher and the students. Those are two horrible things that go on in schools. And I'm going to make a videotape in April. Really, New York State has a bunch of BOCES, which means how they use, try to improve their schools, and the BOCES people are going to sponsor that, and we're going to really make it available all over the world.
So that would be a way of making schoolwork. I was thinking, I reflect, because Kura and I are such good friends, and Lon and I are such good friends, if I'd done something differently, would the marriage perhaps have worked? For my case, I would have to say that I thought I was all alone somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though I had a therapist that I was working with, I was somehow separated from the world, and I thought I was all alone. And the things that went on in the marriage didn't go on in the context of community, even though I was a part of a really remarkable community. The community, I was a part of the Lutheran student community, even though I was Episcopalian. And Luther Ullmann, who married all of us, there was like about 10 of us that got married in 1 year, Dr. Glauser. We all stayed in touch with each other. We still see each other to this day. He said that we were the most remarkable group. Somehow I missed letting the community help me solve my problem, which is something we're going to actually talk about later. But that's the regret I have, that I didn't go to my minister. I did go to a therapist. I was at wit's end, you know, that kind of thing. But I didn't know that there was something past wit's end. I didn't realize that anything that seemed so severely damaged could be returned, and that was something that touched me about your book. I think you even mentioned in it, correct, now mind you, there was no physical abuse in my marriage, but I think you said even if there was some physical abuse in a marriage, that it could be repaired. Was that correct?
Well, I suggest that that can happen, absolutely, but the people really have to give up what I call the 7 deadly habits and replace them with the 7 caring habits, and that's all in my book.
Yeah, and the book, again, is 8 Lessons for a Happier Marriage.
For a happy marriage, it's for a happier marriage.
I thought I said happier, I'm sorry. And Carlene Glauser, your second wife and your best marriage. So I'm thinking, though, even if your first wife hadn't died, maybe that would have turned into your best marriage, too.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? So you were enduring then to some degree.
I was enduring. It wasn't all bad, but there were some things about it I didn't like, and I didn't talk to her as much about it because I think she wouldn't have liked that. It would be kind of, she would consider me as criticizing her.
Oh, got it.
I never criticized either wife, but she did realize that I was kind of a person that needed a wife, and that's why she made that suggestion, and I took her advice and found Carlene, and Carlene was someone that I knew that she knew choice theory because I taught it to her, and she took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah.
And I said to Carlene, whatever happens to our marriage, we'll always use choice theory, and literally, we haven't had an unhappy moment in the 13 or 14 years we've been together.
That's a good story.
Yes,
that is a
true.
Good story. But I'll tell you something. I believe in karma. When I met my husband at the university religious conference, my girlfriend Caressa was there, and she said, here comes Lon Kirkgaard. And I said, where is he? That's my name. I didn't even know what he looked like. And that, to me, when I say karma, I believe in agreements from another time, agreements of the soul, not just an agreement in my head, but a soul agreement. And in those soul agreements, I believe that our time here on Earth, that I'm supposed to evolve through something. And I believe that that has to do with what characteristics I bring in. As the mom of 3 children, do you have any children, Dr. Glauser?
Yes, I have children.
Okay, so you know they're not the same. You know they're not the same.
My children are 3 different, and my brother, sister, who are older than me, are all extremely different from me. We're like each from another planet.
Exactly. So when people go, oh, well, it's the parenting that the kid turned out like this, or, oh, it's the that, no, it's the character that comes in. And,
right.
And you know, I've also done, my background also, Dr. Glauser, is I invented an emotional clearing process called directed breath, and I actually know how to remove traumas from the electromagnetic field of the body in present and past lifetimes, if that's how you want to look at it. It doesn't matter to me because I'm kind of Jungian in the sense that I think it's, symbolic. So if somebody comes up with an image of a past lifetime, we very well could have been there, but whether or not we were, that image still evokes something, and I'm able to help them release the emotion that's attached to that. So I say that when one of the things about marriage is there, it's like you did your job. You said, I'll be there for better or worse. I said, I'll be there for better or worse, but not in the same house. And I believe, you know, I think that's why you got what you got for your second marriage.
I got what I got for my second marriage because I teach choice theory. I firmly believe that, and I teach choice theory around the world to small groups and huge groups, and I think choice theory is the theory that you use when you want to get along well with another person, and if you don't get along well, you should walk away from the other person and say, we don't get along well, but we don't have to make our life difficult together. We just don't get along well, and that's good.
Perfect. And we're actually going to be talking more about that in the next quarter hour of the show. You're listening to Waking Up in America. I'm Dr. Val Kirkgaard. I'm here on the air with Dr. William Glasser. His book, Eight Lessons for a Happier Marriage, which was actually co-written with his second wife, Carlene Glasser, who is his perfect marriage. I mean, I don't know how many people can say what Dr. Glasser has said, but right now we're going to take a break for Diamond Alignment, and then we'll be right back.
We live in a world that is more alive with possibility than ever before in history. Yet it is easy to get lost in the confusion and chaos of such an accelerated world. How do we stay connected and aligned with the unlimited potential that lies within us and soar in these exciting yet challenging times? Diamond Alignment, a sacred technology for the 21st century, offers high-speed connection and alignment with this divine power within, both convenient and profound. The 6-minute multi-sensory diamond experience delivered via the internet clears your mind, relaxes your body, and creates inner peace no matter what is going on around you. The diamond alignment experience effortlessly keeps you charged with joy and equanimity and greater focus and clarity throughout your day. When you experience the expansive energy of diamond alignment, you activate the unlimited wealth and potential within you.
Yo, my shoulders are more relaxed. I feel a slower rate, not in a bad way, just kind of a more toned-down rate. Still have the energy and the appreciation of what's going on. In talking to Jackie about what she was putting together here, she told me that she had actually found a way to transmit divine energy, and I haven't had anybody actually say that this tone or sound or transmission didn't affect them. I was wondering if you could be the first, perhaps, Dr. Glasser. What did you experience when you heard this transmission?
I really didn't experience much of anything.
Well, so he would
it doesn't affect me.
Doesn't affect you.
I don't believe that you can do these things over the telephone, but that doesn't mean you can't do them, but it's something I don't teach. I teach things that are very, very specific, and when people learn choice theory, they really say to me, thank you for teaching this. But choice theory is a very specific thing to learn.
Let me finish here. So what I want to do is, for those of you who did experience something when you heard this transmission, you can actually go to our website at wakingupinamerica.com, and you'll notice that there's a diamond alignment. And Jacqueline allows you or invites you to actually try this out and to use it. And you can go over there as many times as you want and experience the 2-minute interval. I do it quite often when I get going too fast, and I find out that it just tones me down. So for those of you that heard it and wanted to do that, that's where you would check it out. It would be on that website. And also wanted to talk to you about internet mailing and Stardust. Raja, you'll love him. He has a mailing list of 700 and, well, actually about 2 million. He's worked up to 722,000. People are on the mailing list receiving mailings now, and he's putting in all the other ones as fast as he can. So if you want a really quality mailing list to introduce your material to, by the way, it would be something that would be people on that list would probably really appreciate your book, Dr. Glasser. What you would do is you would call 904-460-8083, or you would visit our website at wakingupinamerica.com, and there you would see the Stardust logo, and you just click on that, and you'd go right over to the Stardust website. I've had tremendous improvement in some of my little businesses that I run, and I thank you, Ra, for that. You've done a great job. So here we are. We're on the air with Dr. Glasser, and he's the author of 8 Lessons for a Happier Marriage. I'm Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and we promised that we'd give you some of the techniques out of the book. One of the things that, what would you say is the most important technique?
Well, it's not a technique. It's a lesson. It's something you can learn. A technique is like a person playing the piano and some playing better than others. I don't teach techniques as much as I teach specific things that you can learn and put to work in your life if you want to do it, and that's what my book is about. It has 8 lessons for a happier marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we teach, and they're very specific, and anyone can learn them. And if you want to have a happier marriage, because I believe that every human being in the world knows the difference between being happy and being unhappy. We do know the difference between those two, and most of us, since there is a difference, would rather be happy than unhappy.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think when I was going through your book, Dr. Glasser, one of the things that in your chapter 4, lesson 4, was get acquainted with each other's quality world, and that really resounded with me. And one of the things that resounded with me was about you talking about the idea, the vision of what it is that we see as our perfect world, such as having 2 glasses of wine in the evening with dinner, and then your partner thinks you shouldn't be drinking too much. And I thought, you know, so many of the things, that it's kind of like a little magical space that one puts oneself in, that they can, I come home and I can give myself 2 glasses of nice wine, and it means something to me. But if it means something entirely offensive to my partner, I'm in trouble.
Yes, I mean, I'm not a person that ever drinks alcohol, never did, but it's not because I'm moral or too good for it. I just, it doesn't agree with me, so why should I put anything in my body that doesn't agree with me?
Exactly, so you would be the other person. I'm the one that wants the 2 glasses of wine. Let's say you and I are in a marriage, and
my wife likes wine, and yeah. I enjoy watching her drink it and watching her enjoy it, but she doesn't try to force it on me, and that's the way it is.
But I thought was the interesting thing, the line that actually stuck out to me when I was reading it, was the line that said that you could negotiate this particular thing if it was really irksome between 2 human beings. And in that negotiation, it was important to make sure that the wine didn't disappear, that the other partner didn't promise not to take the wine, that one partner didn't make their spouse promise not to drink, that there was a negotiation that occurred, and that something was left of the other person's ideal or quality world.
Well, you can, I have 7 caring habits. I don't know if they're in the book. I think they are. And one of them is negotiating differences, because it's like you buy a house and you have difference, and man wants this and you want that, and then usually strike a price somewhere between what each one wants. It wants, and you're happy. And if the person says, I want $100,000 for the house, and you say, and I won't negotiate, that's it. Very few people are interested in that house.
Right. So negotiation, I think what's important in negotiation is that both people get a part of what they want.
Right. And if someone wants a large part, negotiation doesn't work. It has to be somewhere near the middle.
I learned that one very expensively when I was new in real estate. When I was in my early 20s, I had somebody that wanted to buy my... I wanted $24,000 for my house, and somebody wanted to pay $22,000 for it, and I wouldn't budge an inch. And I know, to this day, she probably would have even given me $23,500, but I wouldn't move. So I didn't sell the house until later, and I ended up selling it for $19,000, and I only had to do that lesson once. That was the power of negotiation for me. I think what
you had what called seller's remorse or buyer's remorse. So
I had manipulator's remorse or homeowner's stubbornness or
whatever.
You know what I mean? I wasn't going to budge. I thought I could get that, and I wasn't about to give that other person anything less, and I was just sorely mistaken. I would really appreciate it if you were to talk to our listeners about, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think one of your evaluations here about what goes, you know, really goes south in marriages is external control, and I was wondering if you would talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's lesson number one. External control can kill a marriage.
Does, regularly.
And what I say in the book is, if only you learn lesson one, you've learned 99% more than other married people have learned. So external control is very simple, no way but the highway. The only way is my way, and that kind of a thing. And many marriages, they say this, and it wrecks the marriage. So external control is, however, in all societies of the world, most societies attempt to control each other, and that's why all the societies around the world, and I've studied a lot of them, all the societies fail. They all end up in various conflicts and unhappinesses because everyone won't accept the fact that we have to not try to control the other person.
Kind of like our president right now, huh?
President is a classic example. And he's spent this war is going to end up costing us around $3 or $4 trillion, and it's going to get... nothing good is going to happen, except all that money is going to be spent. And when you spend money on a war, it's absolutely... Some wars, I suppose, you have to do that, but this one happens to be absolutely superfluous in most people's opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I've got a question, because I've always thought that the behavior of the current the head of the current administration, it seemed to me like a dry drunk. You know, have you ever worked with alcoholics?
Well, the president was an alcoholic for a long time.
Right, but that behavior to me seems like dry drunk.
Well, that's... I know a little bit about addiction, and people who sometimes give up the addiction, which gave them some pleasure, then they force themselves not to drink, and they find they get very little pleasure in life. I can't find pleasure. In fact, I write in some of my books, if you're an alcoholic, then the only thing that you really get the kind of pleasure you're looking for is in drinking. And if that's your problem, then you're really addicted.
Mm. So
you can give an alcoholic everything in the world except alcohol, and he's dissatisfied. You give him one bottle, he's more satisfied than anything else. And it's a big problem. I'm not a drinking person, but I recognize and deal with those things. And external control is, I want my way, and as soon as a husband and wife... And in the book, I give examples of that. My wife wrote those little examples, and they're very good examples. But when you have to say to your, you know, if people... I gave a talk recently at a Rotary Club, and they didn't let me talk much, and I was just kind of seeing them do their little Rotary things. But they said, well, we have only 10 minutes for the talk. Can you talk in 10 minutes? Absolutely, no problem. I can talk in 3 minutes.
Right.
Give you 3 minutes, something you don't know. And I said to them, if you're married, because I think most of you are in this room, never, never criticize your mate. And if you can learn to do that, immediately you'll have a better marriage. And they said, but. And I said, never do it. And you can say to your mate, not only Dr. Glasser taught me this at the Rotary Club meeting, and I'm not going to criticize you, Ann, and say your mate's a wife, and She said, I'll believe it when I see it. I said, absolutely. They don't believe it. But if I criticize you, point it out to me, I'll apologize profusely. And if you do that once, immediately your marriage is going to be much better than it ever was at all. Now, if you can extend that to never criticize, blame, or complain, three of the seven deadly habits, you can have a much better marriage even before, because one thing my first wife did that really bugged me a great deal, and wherever we went and everything, we traveled and we had quite a bit of money and everything like that, she complained about everything. And that really bothered me, but I mean, she had a right to do it, so I lived with it. It wasn't a terrible thing. She also enjoyed a lot of things, but she complained about this or that. And one thing with my wife, Carlene, she doesn't complain, or if she does, she does it so little that it doesn't bother me at all.
No, I totally understand. We're on the air with Dr. William Glasser, Lessons for a Happier Marriage. He's the creator of Reality Therapy and Choice Theory. And Dr. Val Kirkgaard here, one of my claims to fame is being the mom of two amazing kids and creating the Kirkgaard Method, Directed Breath. If you want to check out this process that I've developed to clear the electromagnetic field of the body of past traumas or of thinking that doesn't create the future that you're looking forward to, if you notice that you're running into a lot of yourself as obstacles as you're wanting to create your future, go to drdoctorvalerie.com. Once again, that's drvalerie.com, and doctor is all spelled out there. So as a licensed therapist, I saw my practice actually go from 28 people a week to 3 in less than 2 months because the process was so effective. For a complimentary half-hour consultation, please call 310-455-8623, and while you're at it, ask me about Monavie. I've actually been having my clients take Monavie, and I discovered something really interesting. The body and what we call the emotional field and our irritability is actually affected by how well we're feeding ourselves. And a lot of people know that, but Monavie happens to provide your minimum daily requirement of 13 fruits and vegetables, and I'm just so happy to have discovered it. Dr. Glasser, we actually got a email from Stacy, and she has a question for you.
Okay.
We just want to let people know that in this last part here, we're actually going to be talking about different aspects of marriage. We've been talking about marriages between a man and a woman right here, but we're going to be talking about it in society. But before we move into that, this last question from the last quarter hour, Dr. Glasser, Stacy wants to know if you have any regrets about your first marriage.
Absolutely not, because I treated my wife very well, and she, in her own way, she treated me very well. I don't have any regrets about it. We raised 3 children and all this kind of a thing. She helped me in many, many things I did, but the idea that she complained a great deal, I would have liked it if she did, but it wasn't enough that I would even consider divorce or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your candor in that response. And to our listeners, I think Stacy's question is a good one, because I think what Dr. Glasser demonstrates to us is that by using the particular point of view that he does, he ends up without regret. And embrace whatever theory or philosophy that allows you to live your life without ending up with regret. So with that, Dr. Glasser, I'm wondering if we take these, well, we touched on it a little bit in the last quarter hour when we were talking about our president being in control, so to speak. What other areas of society, I'm thinking this could make a difference in our jobs, in our friendships, and all kinds of things. Can you comment a little bit on that?
If we use the caring habits, we'll have every part of our life will be good. Supporting, encouraging, listening, accepting, trusting, respecting, and negotiating differences. There's more than 7, but if you can get those 7 out of your life, you're going to be a much better human being. because if you don't get along with the important people in your life, it's really a life really lived very poorly, as I'm considered. I know my mother, she didn't get along with anyone except her sister. She got along well with me, but practically no one else, and she lived 94 years old, and that was the way it was. But she had no friends or anything like that. She didn't seem to need them, but I don't know. But
let's say I'm a politician, and I'm looking at America right now. Some say that we're on the verge of a depression. Other people say different things. And I'm wanting to communicate without criticizing. How would I be speaking? How would I be... when you say not criticizing, can I acknowledge what I see doesn't seem to be working? Is that allowed as a part of your theory?
Well, certainly.
So to your wife, for instance, would there be... For instance, if I'm a politician or if I'm a husband speaking to the wife that's complaining, is there anything I can say?
I would say that I think that now that I understand choice theory, I think everything we do is a choice, and the thing we should try to make is choices that bring us closer together. So examine whatever you say with another person and say to yourself, does what I just say bring us closer together and happier with each other, or does it really separate us from each other? And that kind of axiom will help you a great deal in life.
You know, your point, are you familiar with Bhagwan Rajneesh? Do you know that name?
That sounds familiar.
Bhagwan Rajneesh had a very interesting tarot deck, and you're reminding me of that when you're talking. And the tarot deck had to do with, there were two cards in the tarot deck, and one of them was scissors, and one of them was thread. And the card actually said that, are you taking things apart with the scissors, or are you sewing them together? Are you mending things with thread?
Yeah, those are good analogies, and there's a lot of people like that who think about those. I don't tend to use that very much, but I do try to... everything, to me, goes back to choice theory. I've written a lot of books, and I didn't read choice theory really until maybe 15 years ago. It was started out with Reality Therapy, which was a good book, but it has merged into choice theory. But all of my books really help people to get along better together. And we work now at a women's prison in California and teach them choice theory. And the women, they cry. They say, why didn't someone teach us this before? And they're all there because someone tried to control them or they tried to control someone else. Or both.
So are you having them read your book?
We give everyone a copy of the book, Choice Theory, and they take it like it's a life preserver in a really sea, an ocean that's all filled with waves and everything else. They read it over and over and over again. We've been doing it for a while.
You know what I love about your book? It's 102 pages long.
This book is short, and it's good, yeah. I had it a little shorter first, and HarperCollins, my publisher, said, it's not enough for a book, so Carlene has added the beginnings to each chapter, and now it makes a nice little book. Each little chapter kind of gives an example of a marriage where people are really doing things that wouldn't be as good for their marriage as the book teaches them to do.
Oh, this is funny. I like your cartoons that you have in here, too.
Yeah, John Carlson is one of my colleagues.
Oh, really? He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's a very good friend of mine. He's an Adlerian, and Adlerians are very close to what I do. So we get along very well together.
He's absolutely one of my favorite cartoonists of all times. My favorite, of course, is Doonesbury. I don't know how old you are, but I'm going to suspect that you've seen a lot. How old are you?
Well, at the present time, I'm in the, I guess, eighth decade of my life. I'm 82, and I'm trying hard to live long. I don't want to live miserably, but I live pretty well now, and I have diabetes, age onset diabetes, and I take good care of that, which is easy to do. So well, I still have a lot to do. I have a lot of things scheduled on my thing, and I have a major university, I won't mention the name, in Los Angeles, has now decided that they're going to give me a chair in my work because my work is so important. A major university can do more for it than you could do for yourself, and that's kind of exciting.
You know, it's interesting we talk about age because I like to pick up stuff off the BBC. That's my fun place to find things. And right now, I think a man who lived his life very well was Sir Edmund Hillary. And, you know, he's just recently died, and New Zealanders are calling him the Major Kiwi. And he's just, I have a picture of him right here, and it has his hat, you know, that he wore when he was climbing Everest. One of them says Sir Ed on it. Well, one of the times he was climbing Everest. So here's the first man to reach the top of the world's highest peak, and he's just died at the age of 88, and it looks like he never stopped living. You know, that he was just going full tilt to the end. It sounds like you're going at a pretty alert.
Well, I'm alert and everything, but I'm not very active now in terms of I had to give up playing tennis because I had some kind of a physical thing. Not a big deal, but, you know, there is such a thing as aging, and I accept it. But so far I can still get along and speak and get, you know, a lot of people love to hear me, and I just love doing my really thing of spreading my ideas. And what I'm really interested in is something called mental health.
Uh-huh.
Because there is such a thing as mental health. When psychiatrists talk about mental health, it's a synonym for mental illness, like they have some disease that I don't even believe is a disease. It's just a way to live your life.
Well, this is part of what I'm talking about here. This guy had physical health up until when he died.
Yeah, well, I won't have that, but that doesn't mean that.
But you know, you might. There's actually some things that I'm not sure that you're aware of in the physiology field, but there's some incredible new products that are coming out. Remember I told you I talked to Olympic champions? I hang out with a lot of champions, and one of the things that champions do, Dr. Glasser, is they pull in the latest stuff that's available. And they try it all out. There's some very good products. There's one called Max GXL. There's the other one called Monavi that I was talking about. I'm seeing other things. I saw Russian adaptogens that helped the Russian Olympic teams score so well. So inside of the normal world of health and nutrition, yeah, you're aging. And we all are going to be taking off and moving on at some point.
That's
However,
true.
The quality of your life could be absolutely quite extraordinary, possibly. And if you want to know more about that, I can actually talk to people about that. You can call me at 310-459-4824, and I'll be happy to fill you in more about what I'm referring to here because we really don't have that much time left in the show. It's been a privilege here to have you here today, Dr. Glasser.
Well, I'm privileged to talk to you.
I'm thinking that probably your books are available at Amazon.com, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I would guess so. And would you like to give them your website?
Well, my website is wglasser.com, and it's a very easy website. We've just spent a lot of money to upgrade it and make it enjoyable, and we just put our latest newsletter in the website and things like that.
Well, that's great.
So you can, if you want to find out more about me and choice theory and how to learn it and all the kind of things we do, then go to wglasser.com, and there's a tremendous amount of information.
You
right
got it.
There.
If you want a list of all the books this guy has done, on .com.
This is for all the time you
try. The program has been produced by Kirkhart Media Inc.
Funningcompany.com,
Dr. James Murphy in memoriam.
You're not
Diamond
crazy anymore.
Curdo's Bungalows,
DrVal.com,
E.com, Executive Nathan Jett, Damien Carrillo, and Rich Kepler. And thanks to today's guest, Dr. William, Chief Technical Officer of Ops.
Now your heart is open. This is for all of your crazy schemes,
you get my
love and dreams, and the time you spoke them.
It's my life.
We're almost ordinary people with extraordinary plans. We're almost ordinary people.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on VoiceAmerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.